Well, the temperature may be falling, but the heat is rising. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, it's great to be back with you. Last week we missed because I was celebrating my mom's 86th birthday in Florida. So,
yeah. Well, congratulations to your mother for her longevity.
Yes, I agree. And thank goodness my father's side of the family, they don't do so well on the longevity thing. My mom's side, well, I don't know. We must have some Methuselah genes or, you know, poodle genes or something.
Well, may you be blessed from your mother for a long time.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, we're hoping. I've already beat my dad, so not that I actually beat him, but I have surpassed him in years.
You're now older alive than he got to.
Right.
Yes, understood.
I can see that popping up. Michaelis says he beats his father. That would be tough. He's been buried since 1994. So
have you stopped beating your wife yet? Yeah. No, I'm still working on that one.
Yeah. No, she told me not to stop, so I don't.
Well, I've always knew that there was something about that dynamic.
No, Jenny would tell you that that's false. In any case, I want to open today real quick with talking about a group that I sit on the board of, and that is Relationships Under Construction. If you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you've heard us talk about, we've had Catherine Wood on here and interviewed her. We may do that again before the banquet. We have an upcoming fundraiser, and we did lose some of our funding this year due to a clerical error at the state end. The state did something wrong, and we lost part of a federal grant that we had been awarded, is my understanding of what happened. And so when they lost part of a grant, we lost part of a grant. And what Relationships Under Construction does is teaches, it's a sex education, and it is a hold sex until marriage education. And it's science-based, and we need money to get out there and pay teachers and buy curriculum and all those things. So, that being said, Thursday, April 4th, 2019, there will be festivities and silent auction. It's they say semi-formal wear encouraged. What does that mean? Well, you don't wear your jeans and a ripped t-shirt. Wear business casual, that kind of thing. The normal thing you'd wear to a fundraiser banquet. If you want to wear a tie, highly encouraged. Will I be in a tie? Yeah, I'll be there. Now, I want to invite you to come to that. It's in Columbus. It's on, again, April 4th, 2019. Dinner and program begin at 6:30. The silent auction starts at 5:30. It's at the Villa Milano in Columbus on Schrock Road. And, again, we would like you to register. And Barry and I would love to have you come sit at our table. I don't know, Barry, I don't know if you're going to be able to come or not, or whether you're going to take your own table.
Well, I am planning, Lord willing, to attend. I probably won't do a whole table because it's awfully difficult for me to get a table put together when I live, two plus hours away from the vast majority of people who get the services of the organization. So,
yeah, exactly. It can be tough, but then again, it's a worthy cause. It's not just in the Columbus area; it's statewide. Actually, right now, Relationships Under Construction is worldwide.
Excellent.
RUC is not just confined to Ohio. This is our main bailiwick, but we're in other states, and we're also we have people teaching this curriculum that Catherine developed in Africa.
Cool.
I think Nigeria is one place where it has been strongly adopted and is being used. And, again, that costs money. And like I said, we lost some state funding due to a grant problem. So we would like you to come and help us rebuild our coffers. If you want to know more about this, you can register at relationshipsunderconstruction.com. It's real easy to remember. It's long to type out, but it's relationshipsunderconstruction.com.
Absolutely. Now, Chuck, there are also opportunities to underwrite the program.
Absolutely.
To help them defray the expenses of the event at Villa Milano, and underwriters can contact their office and help and get your name or your company's name in the program, et cetera. And I believe the deadline for that is March 15th. I know because I'm looking at doing that.
Yeah, well, Barry, guess what? The deadline is March 15th, so they get it in the bulletin. That doesn't mean they won't take any more money after March 15th.
Oh, well, of course not. No, but if you want to get some recognition or your company or whatever as supporting, then March 5th, you need to get it in by March 15th so they can get it into the program.
That's right. If you want your company to be representative in the bulletin, or if you just are a proud sponsor as an individual, there's all kinds of sponsorship levels. At RUC, we would very much appreciate hearing from you. Barry and I would be very happy to have you sit at our table.
Absolutely.
We would love that. And it is a wonderful opportunity to touch the lives and the minds of high school and junior high age kids who are the beneficiaries of this curriculum. So, we invite you to come out, put it down on your calendar, Thursday, April 4th, 2019, 5:30 p.m. if you want to be there for the pre-activities, and 6:30 p.m. is when the dinner and the program begin. And they make a promise every year to get you out by 9.
And they're pretty prompt about
that.
They're
very good about that. Catherine herself will come and pull the plug if you're going overtime. So she doesn't like that. She likes to get people out so they can go home and be with their families. So again, please consider joining us. Please consider sponsoring Relationships Under Construction. If you're anywhere in Southeast Ohio and areas that there are very few counties that aren't covered in some way by Relationships Under Construction, sometimes under a different umbrella. Some groups are using the curriculum without the name. Who cares? The message is getting out, and we are able to touch tens of thousands of kids every year, and we need the money to keep being able to do that. And just keep that in mind. We are teaching kids to hold themselves pure until marriage.
It's an excellent program, and I highly endorse it. I once sat on the board just as Chuck does now.
So thank you for allowing me to go off on my soapbox on that. We'll hit you again at the end and remind you.
Well, it's not a soapbox. As a matter of fact, Chuck, it's one of the things that we have to be very concerned about, because we want to make sure that young people do not receive dangerous messaging, which we know groups like Planned Parenthood and others are giving them in the schools, about how to safely navigate sexual intimacy. Well, the only way to safely navigate that is within the bonds of a marriage, in saving yourself for marriage and not being promiscuous and not contracting sexually transmitted infections, not having pregnancies out of wedlock and underage, and finishing your high school career. As a matter of fact, the data is fairly clear that one of the key indicators of poverty is for young people to not finish high school, and a big factor in that is unintended pregnancies. And so this is a way to help young people and hopefully to build strong families that will not succumb to the pressures of poverty. So it's, I mean, it's a great program. They've got really great, they got a lot of evaluative data that's backing them up. I know because I'm working right now with them to gather some of that together to make some presentations, before some policymakers. And, I really am impressed by what's coming out. So we're looking at that. You know, and again, Chuck, it's one of those things that, you know, we're dealing with a lot of things at the state level right now, since we're talking about funding. And of course, and we're going to segue here, something we talked about earlier with Mike O'Reilly over at LRY, and that is that today, and this is Thursday as we're recording this, today Governor Mike DeWine had a press conference discussing the administration's position that they believe that it's appropriate for our purposes of helping our crumbling infrastructure, our roads, highways, and bridges, that we need to create a what they would consider a stable source of funding. Now, a lot of this has been done by bonding and things of that nature in the past, but those bonds have matured and they have been retired, surrendered, etc., paid off, and so therefore there's not more money coming in from bond issuances because they haven't issued any more bonds, especially in this round. And according to the director of the Department of Transportation, a gentleman by the name of Jack Marchbanks, who is one of Governor DeWine's appointees, they are looking at an over a $1 billion per year shortfall in the amount of money that they need to keep the roads maintained. And Chuck, as you know, we've gone through a really kind of bizarre winter with freezing and then thawing and warm weather and torrential rains and snows and everything else back and forth.
Yeah.
That does a number on things like asphalt. And as many people realize, there's many places, especially, and again, oftentimes in the cities are responsible for those roads, not the state. And you're seeing a lot of potholes, et cetera. You know, we've got, with all this rain, we've had areas where roads have flooded, washed out, had mudslides over them, rock slides, whatever it might be. And so there are a number of challenges. Well, the governor today just had a press conference where they are backing an 18-cent per gallon increase in the state share of the gas tax. So when you go to the filling station to fill up on your unleaded or your diesel, and I do believe this, I don't know if it reaches, I haven't looked at the proposal fully yet. I don't know if it reaches to the E85 stuff. I don't know if it reaches to the number one kerosene that some filling stations still have that you can get.
That's not an automobile fuel.
It's not automobile, but again, they just said the gas, so this gas tax may just be on automotive fuel, but then again, it may not be.
Yeah.
But anyhow, it's 18 cents per gallon, which will start as soon as the transportation budget is adopted, and right now the House is hearing debate in the House Finance Committee on this transportation bill because it's been introduced, and it will move through faster than the state's operating budget will, which will come along next month. The transportation budget, the workers' compensation budget, they are all set off as their own separate budget funds, and so they're not involved in the general budgeting process. So honestly, by Easter, Chuck, by at the latest maybe Memorial Day, we could be looking at seeing gas prices rise by at least 18 cents a gallon. And I say at least because according to the governor's proposal, it's going to be indexed to the consumer price index. So if it goes up, so does the tax.
In other words, if we inflate the currency, we got to pay more taxes. Because
that's
the federal
that's the way that works.
That's
yes.
The bottom line. If the federal government inflates the currency, which is how inflation works, then we'll have to pay more in taxes. This is a boondoggle. I'll be right up front. This is a boondoggle. The Department of Transportation has been wasting gobboons of money on junk like smart highways.
And again, you got let's lay the blame at the correct feet here. The department is wasting money on those things like smart highways, not because they want to. because they were directed to do so by a certain former governor of the state of Ohio going by the name of John Kasich.
Yeah, and self-driving trucks.
Self-driving trucks and smart highways and sensors and all of that costs big money. And the problem is, why put sensors in the highway or, you know, markers that will help a self-driving truck if the highway's full of potholes? It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
It doesn't make any sense, and neither does do things like embedding. Now, I know Ohio is way behind on this, but they're still working on it. Embedding solar panels in the road.
Well, you know, it's interesting you're saying things about embedding things in the road, because there are some progressive groups out there that are calling for us to go to something that I believe the state of Oregon did, which is what's called a use tax, where you embed sensors in the highways. And, of course, you know, when you get your license plates for your vehicle, there'll be a chip on probably in the plate or on the sticker that reacts to those sensors in the highway, so that when you drive, it calculates how many miles you drive and then taxes you based upon
per mile
how much use you'd give the roads.
Yeah, there's usually the way that plan works is you get a specific number of miles you get to drive, and anything over that is taxed, and there it's tiered. In other words, if you're 1 to 9,999 miles over the minimum, you pay one tier. If you're 20,000 over, you pay another tier, higher tier, and then, you know, it goes up. So if you drive, for instance, if you're a salesman who uses his car to call on individuals, good luck to you, man. Unless you've got a really small territory, you will pay gobboons of money in taxes.
If you're a lobbyist who has clients all over the state of Ohio, live in southern Ohio, and have to drive to Columbus three or four times a week, I figure I'm going to be probably close to, if not in, the top tier, and that's going to be because that proposal doesn't include eliminating the gas tax,
right?
On automotive fuel,
no.
So that's a straight up use tax. You pay for your gas tax, and then you have your use tax on the roads.
Yeah,
you know, Chuck. You know me. I put a fair amount of miles on a vehicle every year, well above the manufacturer suggested, annual year, or what the average annual usage looks like for anybody else. But you know, I'm not alone. They're over the road truck drivers, long haul truck drivers. You know, they'll get hit pretty hard. You're right. Over-the-road salesman, going to get hit pretty hard. Anybody who has to use those roads to really make a living is going to be the ones who are going to be penalized because, well, you know, here's the deal. You know, with that kind of thing, just like now, government vehicles will probably be exempted from having to pay those taxes. So how many government vehicles do you see on a roadway in your average commute, Chuck?
Oh, gosh. thousands.
Well, yeah, absolutely, because you're talking about state highway patrol vehicles. You're talking about sheriff's vehicles. You're talking about Department of Transportation vehicles. You're talking about state agency vehicles. You're talking about county vehicles. You're talking about township vehicles. The list goes on and on and on.
Per day, probably 30 or 40. Cop cars, all kinds of vehicles with state license plate and federal plates.
I agree. Yeah, obviously, U.S. government vehicles, military vehicles,
right,
et cetera.
Yeah, so it's a lot.
All of those will probably get a nice, healthy exemption from having to pay any use taxes. But right now, they're not they haven't. The use tax thing is setting in the background, kind of like a specter in the back of the room, waiting to pounce if somebody pronounces this current, patient dead. This 18 cent per gallon gas tax increase. So, just to let you know, there is a game afoot here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, there's a game afoot. Yeah.
So, folks, you know, this is a good time that, you know, if you feel like that possibly the government has not been a good steward of the resources that we provide to them already in keeping the roads, highways, and bridges repaired, and you don't believe that the solution is a annual increase that indexes to inflation every year. Again, Chuck, this is so annually they can adjust that gas tax up, because you and I both know they don't ever adjust it down.
Oh,
18 cents will be the floor. Right. It won't matter. If the consumer price index drops all of a sudden, it'll still be 18 cents a gallon. So the only time it'll ever get adjusted is when the consumer price index is up.
Wow. Now, I'm looking at the numbers, and I was, when we talked to Michael Riley, I was incorrect today. The current federal fuel tax is about 18.4 cents a gallon.
Okay.
But I'm looking at the numbers here.
And the state right now is 28 cents per
28
gallon,
cents per gallon. And guess what? We're actually hovering somewhere about the high middle.
Mm-hmm.
We will be.
Yeah, there are a number of states that tax it much higher.
When you add 18 to that, we're going to be at 46 cents a gallon. And guess what? There aren't too many.
That's state. That's just state
that's
taxes.
Just
you add the other 18 plus from the feds, you're looking at 64 cents per gallon on every gallon of fuel.
Now, here's what's interesting. Some states charge sales tax on top of the federal tax and the state tax. So, in other words, the whole price, including the tax, is taxed.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan's one. Let's see. New York, there's a shock. Indiana, Illinois, Hawaii, Georgia, Connecticut, and California.
Not much of a surprise there.
No. But if you look at it, we'll be at 18 and 28 is 46. Here's the current weighted average is 31 cents a gallon. So we're just under the weighted average. Weighted average means it depends mm-hmm. on how much is collected per mile driven and that kind of thing throughout all 50 states. It's weighted on the amount of gasoline that's sold. There are states as low as 14 cents. Alaska. Alaska's got the great advantage of having a huge oil reserve. So their taxes are in pretty good shape since they have a severance tax that covers a lot of that. California has a 55.22 cent state gasoline tax.
How much, though?
55.22 cents per gallon.
Well, we're shortly going to be just like California, yeah. Then. Isn't that something?
Florida is 41.36 cents a gallon. Indiana's 42.9. Let's see. Michigan's 44.13. So it seems like the Midwest, we're doing our best. We want to be number one in the Midwest, apparently. Yeah, wow, there's a dubious honor. New York is 45.76 cents per gallon. Pennsylvania, hoop-de-doo, 58.7 cents per gallon.
Wow, you would think with the Marcellus Shale, that would have come down.
You'd think, but, you know, people don't know what they pay at the pump.
Well, that's true. You go and every day, we were talking about this morning, every day you go to the pump and it's like, okay, last night it was 219, today it's 245, and tomorrow it's 237. So it's like, okay, and when you see that, you just think, oh, those doggone oil companies. And that's probably true because the gas taxes don't fluctuate on those. But again, right now with 18 and 28, you're already looking at 46 cents a gallon. That is, you're pumping, you know, you're paying when you pump.
That's
right now for every gallon of gas is 46 and 46 and point so many cents per gallon.
That's the state cut.
That's state and federal together, because it's 28 the state and 18
the
feds.
You're right. But I'm talking about once we add that.
Once we get that, then the state cut alone is going to be that 46 cents per gallon.
Think about this. 46 and 18, suddenly you're at, 64. Think about what it costs for a gallon. We've had gas under $2 recently, which means that at some point we were paying 28 plus 18 for the feds, and that's 46. 46 cents out of a dollar, let's say it was $1.99, 46 cents out of that was the top line tax, okay?
Yep,
how much a gallon of gas actually went into your tank for before the taxes. Yeah. Now, think about also, if you went in the building and picked up a gallon of milk,
right?
What did that cost you? Almost $4 a gallon.
Yep.
So, what's wrong with this picture? Tax, 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 tax. Now, you made a point up front about some bonds maturing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, and you also told me before we went on the air that Rich Cordray, who ran for governor against Mike DeWine, was jumping up and down and making a big stink. He said, "I promised to not raise taxes, but to sell bonds to fix some of this infrastructure problem." And what's the first thing I said?
You said that it was fake.
Yeah, exactly. It's fake because, folks, the way you pay off bonds is with tax revenues.
That's exactly what.
Well,
if all
you do, though, let's say you sell. Normally, bonds come in multiple year packages. The shorter the term, the higher the interest rate. Normally.
Yep. If you do 10 year bonds, you get one. There's one interest rate. If you do 15 to 20, that's another. And you had indexes for the length of time. So usually when they let bonds out, Chuck, they're letting them out for like over 10 years.
Exactly. There are 30-year bonds. There's all kinds of different bonds. What happens when they mature? Well, you've got to pay them off. What does that mean? That means somewhere, let's say you sell $7 billion worth of 30-year bonds.
Sure.
All at once. What happens in 30 years?
Well, you got $7 billion plus the accrued interest at the percentage rate it was set at the bonds that is basically compounding over those 30 years.
Yeah, normally you receive your interest payments as upfront. In other words, one of the reasons you buy a bond is because, not all of them, but normally you get your interest in increments through the period of the bond.
Okay, yes.
Not always. Sometimes you owed the whole mess at the end. It's like a U.S. savings bond. You buy one for, I forget what the price is now, and they promise a certain percentage at the end. Well, I was given bonds that were bought for me when I turned in my 20s. They were bought for me as an infant. And gosh, I think I used it for school. I think I collected something like almost triple the face value. With, you know, the interest that had accrued on those bonds. U.S. savings bonds now have a limit, which is why nobody buys them anymore. And the interest is pretty stinky. I remember when I was a kid, the federal government ran advertisements, buy U.S. savings bonds. They were on all over the place.
Oh, yeah. And if you're of a certain age, like us, you remember that kind of thing because, you know, it was all over the place. It was on the radio, it was on television, they even did it, you know, during kids' programming on Saturday mornings.
Ladies and gentlemen, since this is a biblically based program, one of the things we're running into is that the Bible's very clear, you should run on debt as little as possible. It's unrealistic to expect a young couple who've just been married and that kind of thing to buy a... I don't know what the average price of a house nowadays is. Around $100,000, I'm thinking. Yeah, to buy a $100,000 house and not have debt. But it's a normal thing to have a 30 or 40 year mortgage and having put... They used to tell you couldn't buy a house without 20% down. Now you can, but you have to get primary mortgage insurance and that kind of thing. So, but the state If you recall, when John Kasich, right after John Kasich took office, what did he have to deal with?
Well, supposedly around an $8 billion budget hole.
And how did he fix it?
Well, the same way he fixed the federal budget's shortcomings. He did some sleight of hand and pushed payments out a number of years beyond in order to make the books balance in the short term.
Past the end of his governorship, because he knew he had 8 years to get to.
And he issued bonds.
Exactly.
You remember, he issued a lot of bonds.
Lots and lots and lots of bonds. Well, the problem with issuing bonds, too many bonds, is that bond rating agencies, there are such things. If you go out to buy a municipal bond, the bonds that you buy will be rated by the state or by the entity that's issuing the bonds. For instance, if you buy municipals. Right now, probably really bad bonds to buy would be like New York City, New York State. Ohio probably isn't a great bond at this point. It just depends. What happens when the state gets way in over its head with the number of bonds it's issued? Its rating drops. In other words, the agency is saying you might not get your money back.
Right.
Now, how would they do that? It's not unprecedented that a state would repudiate its bonds. And by that, they say, we're not paying you back. When has it happened in the past? Okay, folks, we have a heritage here in Ohio of and all throughout the Midwest and New York with the canal system. Illinois went hog wild, and I'll be quite honest, who was in on this going hog wild? Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was a big promoter of bonds to build canals. Why they were going to build canals to every burg in Illinois, and they sold kajillions in bonds. I mean, in normalized dollars, in other words, dollars corrected for 2019, it was essentially the equivalent of tens or hundreds. It's been a while since I read the stats, but tens or hundreds of millions of dollars worth of bonds. Okay. Mm-hmm. What happened? Well, the canals were very important, but they didn't get finished. The canals were an important method of transportation for probably about 25 years. And then what happened? What came along that obsoleted the canals? The railroad.
Railroads, yeah, absolutely.
And how were most railroads built? Most of them were built by private individuals, by private corporations, but they all got subsidies. But the fact is that as soon as the railroads came in and laid track, the canals became useless. Because you could put something on a railroad and have it point to point at 25 miles an hour rather right. than point to point and having to go through locks and all that business at 4 miles an hour. Well, what did that, I mean, that's sort of like going from horse and buggy to having a V8 engine in a roadster. That's a major change. That's a quantum leap in technology and delivery time. It's sort of the same thing now with why the railroads are obsolete. There's a number of reasons for it, but it's because you can do point-to-point trucking in usually less time for less money than shipping mm-hmm. by. Now there's still some stuff that has to ship by rail. But you'll see package containers on the back of a truck, and you can buy one if you want to. The current trend, of course, is to buy a package container and convert it into a garage or a shop or even a house. If you've seen any of those shows on like DIY Network, where they people are converting shipping containers. But that being said, let's go back to it. So what happened to Illinois' bond, Illinois' canal bonds? Well, they weren't collecting any revenue because there weren't any tolls. Nobody was using it anymore. So what happened? They fell into disrepair, and eventually they were filled in a lot of, I just did a canal tour. My daughter is the one of the directors over at the office director over at the Licken County Historical Society, and of course Licken County was a center for the canals, because what's on the southern end of Licken County?
Canals.
Buckeye Lake.
Yep. Well, there's that too.
Buckeye Lake essentially was created as a reservoir because it's the hot right on the highest spot, the Licking Summit, which is basically right outside Millersport, is the highest spot. So it fed the canal system both ways, north and south.
Okay.
So again, huge amount of money. This was manual labor. It required a lot of, even when you underpaid people grossly, it required a lot of money. And there were a lot of bonds sold. Again, in Ohio, how long did the canal system last? Oh, you can find old pictures of parts of the canal that still existed in like the 1860s and 70s, but it wasn't in use because there was a railroad.
Mm-hmm.
So again, a lot of states really just defaulted on there and repudiated their debt on canals. They didn't even go to another source of revenue to pay it back. They just said, we're not paying it back.
Mm-hmm.
So the bonds became worthless. That's the problem you run into. That's the danger when you overissue bonds.
It is.
So what happens when those are due? Well, okay, let's say they all that $7 billion that we talked about at the beginning of this tirade all come due at once. What do you got to do? You got to come up with $7 billion. How do you get it? Well, you can either reissue new bonds, which bond issuing agencies really don't like. It's sort of like borrowing money on money owed instead of borrowing money against your house. Okay? When you take a mortgage, what do you borrow it against? You borrow it against the money based on the value of your house. That's why they want you to have a 20% down payment, so you already have 20% in equity.
Yep.
And you've got that amount, and they're pretty sure the value of your house is not going to fall, except in, obvious certain neighborhoods or certain things can happen. They know that, and they take the gamble. That's the whole reason you pay interest. But when you're on some of these bonds, when you issue a bond to build infrastructure like a road, let's say you build a 30-year bond, the road will still be there, but is the original paving that was there to build that road at the time still there? Chances are pretty slim.
I was going to say, that's slim to none, yes.
That's the problem you're running into with long-term, even short-term bonds, and you can overissue, and that has been a major problem in the past.
Yes, it has, and I'm not sure it's going to get a whole lot better, but it looks like the only option, according to the governor's office, is raise the gas taxes.
Oh, yeah, well...
Just what we need in a recovering economy, right, Chuck?
Barry... I'm always amazed that nobody ever talks about tightening their belt and living within their means. Especially those of us who haven't had, raises in years.
But this is government, which is a shrine to excess.
Well, that's true. Government never makes sacrifices. They tell us, oh, it's our turn to make a sacrifice so that we can make this all work. Well, again, then you throw it into just drivel. You throw it into smart highways, research on embedding sensors and self-driving trucks and all kinds of real innovations that are completely undeveloped, and the Ohio taxpayer is basically being asked to pay for the development. And there's nothing
new
about...
That's awfully convenient.
Well, there's nothing new about that. Do you remember the back during the Taft administration, the bond issuance for... what was the name of that thing? Something Ohio. But it was for a bio...
Frontier program?
Frontier, yeah.
First Frontier.
Yeah, First Frontier. What has Ohio actually gotten out of that? Well, we didn't recover our money. I'll just about guarantee it. Because a lot of that money, as I recall, there was a big controversy because a lot of it, the stem cell research companies really were smacking their lips and rubbing their hands together. Well, where would you get the stem cells? From aborted fetuses.
That's true.
Now, research since then has basically made that not as viable. But what does that do? It forced every taxpayer in Ohio to be complicit in the murder of babies to harvest parts.
True.
And people didn't want to talk about it in those terms. And in fact, we got made fun of at the time for good old First Frontier. We got, because we were Luddites.
Oh, absolutely. Third Frontier.
Third Frontier. Yeah. Third Frontier. Sorry about that.
No,
it's been
okay.
Been too long. Now, nobody's talking about it now. Why? Well, some of the bonds are going to start coming due.
That's when they'll start talking about it again. They'll be talking about all these wonderful things that we can still possibly hope to get as long as we just, like, reissue bonds.
Exactly. All you got to do is reissue the bonds. Well, okay. At what interest rate? And remember that when your bond picture is oversold, you have to issue them at a much higher interest rate because they're much more risky.
Oh, absolutely.
And again, that's why 30-year bonds are cheaper than 5-year bonds. Because the likelihood of you getting your money back in 5 years is pretty good. At the end of 30, ooh. What if the technology has completely been swept away? Well, as we saw with canals, you just don't get your money back, period. That's
awfully handy.
It's real handy. It took years for Illinois to recover economically from that mess because basically nobody'd buy their bonds. Well, a state unable to issue debt bonds is a state unable to... it's a dirty secret, folks, but they have to be able to issue bonds because tax revenues come in kind of clipped phases. The IRS, one of the reasons that, let's talk about tax policy. Because again, this is a biblical subject. The thing about tax policy, when the income tax first started, there was no withholding. You filed at the end of the year and paid your taxes. Now, what did that do? Everybody knew exactly what their taxes were. Everybody knew what they were paying in taxes, and they knew what percentage of their income. Now, the first graduation in the income tax, do you know what the first graduation was? If you remember, it's been graduated since 1913.
Okay.
Do you know what the first graduations were?
Not offhand.
The top rate was 7%.
Okay.
It went from 1 to 7. 7%. Do you know what most people pay now? What the top rate is now?
It's somewhere in the 40s, isn't it?
I think it's 37.
37, okay. 37, 39.
39, yeah, okay. somewhere in there.
Right.
Before Reagan's tax cut in the 80s, the top rate was about 80%, but nobody ever paid 80%. Why not? Because if you start taxing people at 80%, and remember, this is the big proposal from the economic geniuses in the Democratic Party, AOC and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Chuckie Schumer, except I think Schumer's got a taste that that's probably not going to work out. They're all talking about 80% rates and enforcing it and surcharges on top of that. What happens then? Well, the rich people who had the money no longer have money to invest. What does non-investment mean? It means there's nobody to buy the bonds, Barry.
That's right.
There's nobody to buy the bonds. There's nobody to put money into corporations. There's no money to pay individuals. So what happens to the unemployment rate?
It goes up.
Yeah, and a lot of times, in some cases, you can run taxation to the point where people leave the country.
Mm-hmm.
Which Sweden discovered in the 70s. Sweden is backing away as rapidly as it can, because you can't unbuild a dam in a day.
Right.
But Sweden is backing away from socialism. I always laugh when I hear Sweden and the Nordic countries are the examples. They're all backing away from socialism as fast as they can get because it doesn't work. And that's the reason. You can't run the tax rate up to the point to afford to pay for the programs. And that's what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible's very clear. God only wants 10%, and government essentially is limited in its, it should be limited in its ability to take. And right now we don't have that. I mean, we do to an extent, because like we said, the top rate's 39%, which is still ridiculously high. You know, I always tell people, it's not that high. And I'm like, it's 39%. God only wants 10. Well, 10 plus, you know, special offerings and that kind of thing. But
yeah.
What we're staring down the barrel of is the same nonsense that got us into the mess we had in the late 70s and early 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Government overspending, government overtaxation, basically too many bureaucrats, too many people on the public dole, and not enough. Right, the beauty of it right now is with the tax cuts that, and let's talk about that for a second. This mm-hmm. I know this is not where we were going, but I'm hearing a lot of fake news reports, and I'll give you right up front, folks. It's fake news. The big three, WAPO, the Washington Post, the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, all your major newspapers are running boohoo stories. We got USA Today while I was in Florida, and the condo would slip them under the door, and I always got a good laugh out of USA Today. It's a propaganda rag.
Yeah.
What they were talking about is, here was the big quote. People's refunds are smaller than, they're not getting the size refunds. Now, what was the
conclusion? Chuck, that's a deeply, desperately flawed argument. I was just going to have to just lay that out right now. That's one of the worst arguments that
absolutely.
The left could possibly make, and they're making it because they know most people don't understand tax policy.
That's why I brought up the thing about people used to file their taxes once a year and pay then. Folks, when we went to withholding during World War II, and unfortunately we can thank the likes of Milton Friedman for that. That was his brainchild, although it has precedent mm-hmm. before that. But Milton Friedman said, we need this to fund the war effort. So they went to withholding tax. Well, once you went to withholding tax and all you get is your paycheck, well, your stub shows you what you paid in federal income tax, but it doesn't really hit you. It did those first people who had withholding. But now that it's embedded in the system, you don't know what you pay in federal income tax.
Very, very few people do.
In fact, when people say, the government's given me my refund, they look at it as the government has gifted you this money. When in fact, what has happened is the government is simply reluctantly and dragging their feet as long as they can, giving you money back that you loaned the federal government.
Yes.
For no interest at all.
That's true.
So what did Trump do? Trump made it possible. He had the withholding tables changed, and he did a tax cut. so that you actually take more home. Now, people noticed it up front. Do they notice it now? No, because the media is saying you're being ripped off. You're not getting as much money back from the government. The government isn't giving you as much money. Well, of course they're not, because you're keeping it in your paycheck and you're spending it. That's why Nancy Pelosi said, oh, it's $1,000 a year. It's peanuts to the average taxpayer. Hey, $1,000 a year is $1,000. It's almost $100 a month. That may not sound like much to Nancy, who's got millions of dollars of in her own personal wealth. I didn't mean billions. I meant millions. Too many M's and B's can get mixed up, and then we got to add TR for trillions when we talk about national debt. Believe me, almost $100 a month. Guess what that is? That's dinner out once a week for the family. In a lot of cases, more gasoline and a little more money to go on vacation. It doesn't sound like much, but it's a lot. Especially to
$1,000 more to put into your children's college fund.
Bingo. Or to invest in stocks or bonds, which a lot of people did. So the drivel, I mean, it's really a desperation play to sit there and say somehow taxes have been raised because you're not getting as much of a refund. No, taxes have not been. Or the really complex case I heard was that it's actually costing the average taxpayer money because they're actually keeping more in their paycheck. I tried to follow the logic in that argument. And it's sort of like following the logic of not allowing Amazon to come to your city because there was like a $3 billion tax incentive with a $27 billion. I'm not for, by the way, tax subsidies for corporations. I think that's a bad idea. But I understood the math. You're gonna give them $3 billion in tax breaks, and they're going to bring $27 billion in revenue in. Well, look, it looks like the state's $24 billion to the good on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're not going to get it. Now, I do not want to blame. A lot of people are rubbing their hands together and blaming AOC for this, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She had nothing to do with it. Oh, yeah, she was vocal about it.
Right.
But she had nothing to do with it. She's in Congress. Who screwed it up?
The governor.
Oh, Cuomo. Governor Cuomo and the state legislature messed it up. And the city messed it up. How'd they mess it up? Because they made it rather clear that they were going to do what Oregon had done to some businesses up there. They passed a tax, a head tax for every employee. You have to pay a tax for every employee. And New York said, you know, we're going to employ that methodology. Well, guess what? Why would Amazon want to build a headquarters, despite the fact that politically Amazon is politically aligned with Cuomo and his infanticide and police state tactics and no guns and, you know, all that stuff. Why would you go?
All the things that makes New York such a wonderful place.
That's right.
Live.
It's the place you don't want to go. Why would Amazon move there when they immediately hear they're going to be taxed more, which means their costs go up, which means they have to raise their prices, which means that someone, some enterprising company, might be able to swoop in and say, you know, we're down here in reasonable tax territory. We can take them on that basis. New York, I'm sorry, Amazon used the current crisis and the things being said in New York as an excuse to bail out. So, but what are the New York politicians doing? They're blaming Ocasio-Cortez for something she had absolutely no control over. Who had control over it? They did.
They did. Well, that's convenient, Chuck, is to find a convenient foil that people will buy into. Oh, okay. Yeah, must be their fault. you should know, it's the old adage, anytime a politician asks you to do something or refrain from doing something, ask yourself the one simple question. If I do what they're asking me to do, how does it benefit them?
Right. And
so how does it benefit them? If we attack AOC for their bungling of this mess, they get a walk away scot-free and get a bungle more.
Yeah, exactly. At some point, I have to think that the people of California, if anybody's left, who any conservatives are left, they're leaving New York in droves and taking their businesses with them, mm-hmm. for very good reason. And you watch, California and New York are going to institute exit taxes.
Oh yes, so you can't. You can check out any time you like, but you can
never leave. That's right, Hotel California, baby. Well, but Mario's dad, Governor Cuomo,
Andrew yeah.
is making noises like New York shortfall in revenue is the fault of federal tax policy. No. You guys were counting on continuing to be subsidized. Remember, one of the things with President Trump's tax cut was that there's a $10,000 ceiling on the amount of state and local taxes that you can deduct from your federal income tax. Well, what does that do in Ohio? Usually not much, unless you like live in New Albany or parts of Upper Arlington or, you know, some ritzy place. Generally, those of us out here in the rural hinterlands or just any place like Westerville or any place like that, we don't pay $10,000 in income taxes or in property taxes. So we get full deduction on that. Well, when you get to places in like New Jersey that have $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 in annual property taxes, and they only right. get to deduct 10. What does that do to those individuals?
Well, it makes them pay more taxes.
Yeah, lots more taxes. And what does that do to their spending?
It curtails it.
What does that do to sales tax collection?
It suppresses it.
Throws it in the dumper. Well, yep. Not only that, people start looking for an out.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
They will maintain a residence in New York City as a temporary, but it will move to non-income tax states like Tennessee or Florida.
Absolutely.
So that's what they're complaining about. People are moving their primary residences out of the state, and therefore we're not able to collect as much income tax. Boo hoo. Boo hoo. You and I, Barry, no longer have to subsidize with our federal tax dollars New York, New Jersey, California, any state that has exorbitant property taxes that they got to deduct. We don't subsidize it anymore.
Well, I'm all for that.
That's the bottom line. Why we were being forced to help New York prop up a sinking ship, you know, help them bail out. Hey, you guys go around killing all the infants you want, and doing confiscating as much privately held property and weapons and money as you can, and see how long people last who want to stay as residents. I've talked to people. I have a nationwide and actually a worldwide clientele, and they'll tell me, we're looking to get out. We're going to move to Arizona. And Californians telling me we're moving to Arizona or Texas.
Yep. I'm surprised they don't move to Nevada.
Well, some of them have.
Yeah.
Nevada and Utah, especially dietary supplement manufacturers. Utah is a mecca.
Oh, I'm sure that it is.
And they are very friendly to dietary supplement manufacturers there. And it's partly because of so many Mormons are heavily into the supplement industry.
Okay.
Okay, that being said, we are out of time.
I thought we might be.
We are. We are way out of time. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And again, we would like for you to join us April 4th, 2019 at the Villa Milano on Schrock Road in Columbus. 5:30 for the pre-dinner, 6:30 for the dinner. Go to register www.relationshipsunderconstruction.com. Or drop a line to Barry and I through www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And you can come sit at our table. Please join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.